on this episode of RevHang.
Only the most professional of podcasters here.
Microsoft Excel is not made for that.
Speaking of unfortunate events, let's move on to IndyCar. Talking points. Ben, this is where we pop off.
Yeah, this is our bread and butter. Peanut butter and jelly. Lance Stroll to Mercedes confirmed.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to RevHang. I'm Nathan, and alongside me virtually, as always, is my good friend and co-host, Ben Bagley. How you doing, Ben?
Oh, pretty good. Just ironing out the old microphone issues.
Yes, this is our second attempt at this, but that's okay.
We're practiced. We know exactly what we're going to say.
Only the most professional of podcasters here.
Yeah, you can really tell who does this more often and who is purely just still figuring it out.
Well, I do this as often as you do, Ben. Anyway, that's fine. This is not a technical difficulties podcast. This is a racing podcast. So, let's go into some paddock news.
Actually, Zach I like Brown. That take a lot, yeah.
What's that?
Actually, I like that take a lot.
Zach Brown extends his contract with McLaren until 2030, so he will be with that team for the foreseeable future. His seat seems to be safe, contrary to what the Drive to Survive drama would suggest. Drive to Survive has tailed off a little recently, so I have not been keeping up with it like I had in the past, but I did watch the first couple episodes.
Yeah, I haven't watched since season 3, to be completely honest, so I didn't even know that was a worry for McLaren that Zach Brown wasn't going to be there.
Yeah, there's some McLaren drama, apparently. That's one of the complaints, is that they dramatize everything to a certain extent that may not be super realistic. But yeah, usually we tell people, just getting in Formula 1, just watch the first 2 seasons of Drive to Survive, and you're usually good from there to just... Yeah. Follow some subreddits to keep up on news and drama in the paddock, and then just watch the races, and then you'll get as much of the story as you'll ever need.
Yep. The first 2 seasons are really good for, you know, stringing together everything that's happening and some of the dynamics into a narrative that people can follow. But it kind of starts weighing itself down with that in the later seasons, for sure.
Yep. I think it's good. It's leaning too much into the drama, not heavily enough into the documentary like it was in the first couple seasons.
Yeah, it's almost like it's forgotten that it has the excitement in the form of one of the most exclusive, fastest racing series in the world that history has ever seen. And they're like, but what more could we add to it?
Yeah, exactly. All right, moving on, let's talk about Logan Sargeant and Williams. He was bumped from his seat this week. There were only 19 cars on the grid for the race because Alex Albon crashed in free practice 1 into the wall, damaging his chassis beyond repair, or at least quick enough repair for the Australian Grand Prix. And Williams made the decision to have Albon race in Sargeant's car this week and have Logan sit on the sidelines, and that was not the most easiest pill to swallow for most people.
No, and they put out, you know, very professional social media posts saying, you know, oh, we're all on board and we all agree and we're all doing our best, but there's definitely got to be some tension in the background, and that's definitely got to hurt Logan later on, especially knowing that Albon didn't actually get into the points on Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. It's got to be hard for Logan for this to happen. I don't know how this is going to affect his confidence going forward in the season, how it's going to affect the interpersonal relationships within the team. I'm sure the effect is not going to be zero. He seemed to take it as well as he could have, but I'm sure internally he's not super pleased. I wouldn't be. So I'm hoping that it turns out okay for him. Maybe he'll bounce back from this with some anger, but yeah, can't see this as a net positive for him.
No, and I actually saw a little snippet. I'll paraphrase from something Max Verstappen said about it. I think he said something to the effect of, if that happened to me, obviously didn't, but if it did, I would be on the next plane home and I'd crash the car next time I drove it.
Yeah.
To paraphrase. It was,
yeah, not, I could definitely see Verstappen doing that. I can't imagine what's going through Logan's head, just with, you know, they've given him this second chance, a second season to prove his worth, and then he gets bumped from this race, and so it's just one less chance for him to prove what he can do. So, you know, it just kind of shows Williams' cards a little bit in terms of where their head's at with Logan, if they're not even willing to let their second driver, obviously he is the second driver, everyone knows that, but if the first driver crashes out and takes his car out of contention, they aren't even willing to let the second driver go out and fight for those points. It just seems to me like a team that's confident in their second driver, in their decision to hire that person, would not do that.
No, it almost makes you wonder, like, okay, what's the point of giving him a second chance if it's going to be, you know, kind of a half-assed second chance?
Right. So I don't know what this is going to do to Williams in the future. James Vowles is adamant that this will never happen again. I know Williams had a lot of problems during the offseason. They were pretty late getting a lot of their parts to testing. Watched a video by The Race, a very good one, this week that explained how Williams has done things in the past and that they are currently overhauling all of their systems. They were literally designing their cars in Microsoft Excel for the past 20 years.
Microsoft Excel is not made for that.
No. So that might explain some of the downturn in Williams. So James Vowles is on top of it. He is adamant that they are overhauling everything. They're going through the pain this season so that they're ready to go next season and will have everything completely sorted before development starts for the 2026 car. So this might be a tough year for Williams, but just watching James Vowles' interviews and listening to him talk, I think he is the right guy for that team.
It gives a lot of confidence.
Yeah, he's very well-spoken. You can tell he's very intelligent. He knows what he's doing. He's got years and years of experience at Mercedes during their reign. So I'm very confident that Vowles can get Williams turned around. He just needs to be given the time to do so. So I would not be surprised if Williams is definitely well into the midfield in 2026.
That'd be awesome to see. Love that. Too bad it just is taking its toll on some of the drivers in the meantime.
Yeah, it is unfortunate. But speaking of unfortunate events, let's move on to IndyCar.
Ouch.
And the Thermal Club Million Dollar Challenge.
The Rich Boys Club.
Yeah, this was the most overhyped racing event I think I've ever witnessed. I am not one to be super negative on stuff like this, I should say. But, oh boy, this was the event that we were hoping for, I don't think. I think speak for a lot of people when I say that.
I watched that 20 laps and I was like, that's it? That's all we get? Even the track itself, I wasn't really thrilled by it.
I think the event was completely ruined by the format.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
It just didn't make any sense. Why not just have excitement out of it?
Right. Why not have a regular race and the winner gets the prize? I don't understand the rake that they had. It was like the first going in. There was no explanation until about a week ago of what this event was. And so everybody assumed, as it was being marketed, the Million Dollar Challenge, that the winner would get $1 million.
Yeah,
but
but you get $1 million.
Yeah, that's not how it worked at all. There was like a $1.7 million prize pool, and the rake was super weird. The winner got like $500,000. The second place got $250,000. I think maybe the reason it's $1 million is maybe the team gets $500 as well as the driver. So I think that would explain the math a little better. But it's just super misleading.
Yeah.
And it's just confusing. And then the format was confusing. There was two qualifying sessions where I think it was 12 drivers each or something, maybe 14. And so they qualified, and then they had the respective heat races for those qualifying sessions, where your starting position in your heat race was determined by your qualifying. And so then there were two heat races, and then the heat races happened, and it eliminated drivers down to the top six from each heat race. And so there were 12 drivers total going into the final race. And then I think the starting position in the final race was determined by your qualifying time from it was just super weird. Like, I don't know.
This is why people don't get into IndyCar.
Well, IndyCar really isn't that complicated most of the time. I mean,
yeah, but they see this and they're like, oh, that makes zero sense. I'm just going to go back to F1 where there's practice and then qualifying and then the race.
Yeah, there were also sometimes four practice sessions. Yeah.
Well, we're not going to get into that.
Yeah, it was, I don't know, there were four practice sessions for this race, and the teams were told you can use this as testing for the season, or you can use this as testing and practice for the race. And so teams are doing completely different things in practice. Qualifying was a nightmare because there were two qualifying sessions, so the track conditions were completely different because a sandstorm blew across the track during the second qualifying session, and so all of the drivers in the second session just ended up being screwed until the end of the session when Paulo managed to pull a lap out of nowhere and put his car on pole position. It's like, I get the track conditions change and everything is fluid when it comes to how the track, that's just part of motorsports and qualifying in general. But splitting up the sessions for something like this, $1 million challenge where everybody is supposed to be going for this cash, and then you have like this elimination heat race thing, and then a 20 lap final race that was split in half
with a 10 minute with break.
No pit stop. You were given a halftime, which I figured was just essentially a red flag and everybody goes in for a pit stop for free, but that's not what it was. You were allowed to refuel during halftime, but
you couldn't change,
you weren't allowed to change your tires. So then we have this really wacko strategy from several drivers, Colton Herta pulling it off better than anybody else, where
he's got 12 seconds a lap behind.
Yeah, he's going 10 to 12 seconds a lap slower than the leader to save his tires for the second stint.
But still stay on the same lap as everyone else.
Yeah, it was just, it was such a nightmare.
Which, it makes sense. Why would you do anything else if you have a 10-minute downtime, and then it just starts all over again, but you don't get a chance to change tires?
Exactly.
That first 10 laps is meaningless. Why would you do that?
Exactly. And then the rest of the field, by the time they got to lap 6, they're like, it's more worth it for us to just not battle and save our tires for the second stint. So the entire first stint was just a procession. Some drivers 12 seconds off the pace intentionally. So there's no racing going on. And then the second stint, everybody's tires are shot except for Herta's and Canepino's, but Canepino didn't really go anywhere. And so the only excitement from the entire event was Herta making his way through the field. But the tire deg was so high that by the time he made his way to fourth, he just stalled out.
Yeah. Ridiculous.
This needs, if they do this again next year, they need to make some serious changes to the format because it's a great idea. I like that there's a separate race that isn't for championship points. If there were championship points involved in this, I would be so livid. This would be horrible.
It's the only redeeming quality about this race is it doesn't matter for the championship.
Yeah, I'm glad that this didn't matter for the championship at all. I liked that the idea that this race exists, but the format needs to be overhauled completely. Or else, like, it's not. If you watched it throughout the whole weekend, I think you kind of understand what we're talking about here. It was just confusing and convoluted and all over the place. and just not enjoyable.
and we did not like it.
Usually I don't say that about IndyCar. Usually IndyCar is the exciting one compared to
Formula 1. That's the one where we go to get away from like the showboating, drama, weird event things.
Yeah, we watch this for the racing and the wheel-to-wheel action that IndyCar
is. There's none of that this time.
No, absolutely not. So with all of that ranting aside, let's just go through. I don't think we even need to go through qualifying. It doesn't matter.
Just skip to the end.
Yeah, we'll go through the results.
Who won the not $1 million?
The $500,000 winner of the $1 million challenge was Alex Palou. won by a country mile, followed by Scott McLaughlin and Felix Rosenqvist on the podium. Colton Herta got fourth. Marcus Armstrong was fifth. Linus Lundqvist was sixth. And then 7 through 10 were Rossi, Newgarden, Lundgaard, and Canepino. And then 11th and 12th did not finish, and that was Graham Rahal and Pietro Fittipaldi. Fittipaldi was disqualified for underfueling his car because of some rule that they were told, but not really.
There's another strategy.
Yeah. And then Graham Rahal's throttle stuck open, so that was a problem. But yeah, just a kind of a nightmare of a race. It was interesting. We saw some younger drivers or less experienced drivers in the top 12. So that was cool. Seeing like Marcus Armstrong and Linus Lundqvist and Agustin Canepino racing.
That was a good point. I saw Colton Herta passing Armstrong for fourth, and I was like, passing Armstrong for fourth? Because Armstrong's not supposed to be that far ahead. But yeah, that was pretty cool.
It was. Yeah, for sure.
And I will say, seeing an Andretti driver freed of the chains of Andretti's strategy was pretty fun, because we saw Herta have a pretty good race, and all he had to do was not drive very fast. And then he didn't have to worry about tire management and everything at all. He could just drive as fast as he wanted.
Yeah. Yeah, it was definitely great strategy from that Andretti garage. I hope we don't see this again in terms of how this went down.
Yeah, or else IndyCar.
Yeah, we're gonna do something that we're not gonna do anything, but
we're gonna beat up John IndyCar, the CEO of IndyCar.
Don't think that's right, but
go to his house. Coming for you, Mr. IndyCar.
I like the enthusiasm, man.
All right. I'm fired up.
In terms of talking points, we didn't have much. Polo is back. He won the race. He's definitely back to his winning ways. Colton Herta had strong pace in the second half of the final race. Tire degradation was really high. We talked about that a little bit. And then last one is Scott Dixon punted Romain Grosjean in the first heat race. And Grosjean spun across the track and took out Rinus Vike and almost Will Power, but it was actually not Grosjean's fault this time.
Incredible.
So, progress, I guess. You're crashing out, but it's not your fault. Now we just need to get to the point where he's not crashing out all the time.
Yeah, it's fine. It's not like I had Dixon, Power, and Vike on the podium for my predictions last week.
Yeah. We didn't do super well on our IndyCar predictions,
he took out my top. He took out my top three finishers.
I think we thought this was going to be a normal race, but it was not.
Yeah.
All right. Formula One is next. In the Australian Grand Prix, we've got some exciting things to talk about this week for a race that on surface level may have seemed exciting, but digging deeper, I was not. I don't know. We'll talk about this, Ben, because I know what you told me last night while we were watching
the race. More excited about it than you were.
Yes. I would love to delve into that. But first, let's go through the top 10 in qualifying to give some context. Max Verstappen took pole position for, I believe, the third time in a row. Carlos Sainz then was second with Sainz appendix. And then Lando Norris qualified third, followed by Leclerc in fourth and Piastri in fifth. And then 6 through 10 was Perez, Russell, Tsunoda, Stroll, and Alonso. One thing to note, Sergio Perez did qualify third, but he was dropped to sixth after a three-place grid penalty for impeding, I think it was Hülkenberg, in qualifying.
Yes. Yep.
And then 11 through 15, I guess we'll go through all of them, were Hamilton, Albon, Bottas, Magnussen, and Ocon. And then 16 through 19, keeping in mind that Sargeant was not involved, were Hülkenberg, Gasly, Ricciardo, and Zhou. All right. So, going into the race, Verstappen got away well, keeping the lead into Turn 1, and on Lap 2, Sainz passed Verstappen into Turn 10 to take the lead, and the masses rejoiced. Mm-hmm. On Lap 4, the masses rejoiced even harder when Verstappen had a brake failure that led to him retiring from the race. On Lap 17, Hamilton had an engine failure and caused a virtual safety car. Alonso got a cheap pit stop under this virtual safety car, coming out in P5. On lap 21, Perez passed Russell into turn 10 for P6, and then six laps later, passed Alonso also into turn 10 for P5. On lap 41, Piastri passed Alonso into turn 12, and on the final lap, Russell crashed out of the race, causing a virtual safety car until everybody crossed the line. Alright, before we get into all of the drama that was this race, let's go through the results. The top three on the podium were Sainz, Leclerc, and Norris. And then fourth and fifth were Piastri and Perez. Six through ten were Stroll, Tsunoda, Alonso, Hülkenberg, and Magnussen. 11 through 15 were Albon, Ricciardo, Gasly, Bottas, and Zhou. 16 and 17, writing off the finishers, were Ocon and Russell. Russell did not finish, but he was classified because he made it to 95% race distance. Or maybe it's 90%. I don't remember.
I think it's 95.
Is it 95?
I think so.
Regardless, it's either 90 or 95% race distance. If you make it that far, then you do technically get classified as finishing the race. All right, and then our DNFs were Hamilton and Verstappen, both with mechanical failures. All right, talking points. Ben, this is where we pop off.
Yeah, this is our bread and butter.
Bread and butter. Yes. All right, starting off, we have the Verstappen DNF. We were going to talk about it. Everybody's talking about it. Yeah, brake failure. His brakes got stuck on the start on one side of his car. It was the rear right brake got stuck on just a little bit after the start, and so it threw his balance off. He noticed some weird oversteering into right-hand corners. He eventually overheated his brake, as one would expect, traveling at 200 miles an hour with your brakes on. And they exploded when he came into the pit lane. So
pretty cool. That was exactly the handicap we need to see an exciting race with Verstappen in it.
Yeah, exactly.
If we find a way to have the brakes on without them catching on fire while he's racing, I think we could have some really exciting races where he's not as far ahead.
Yeah. I think it's also very impressive that he managed to make it to turn one in first place by a comfortable margin, essentially with his handbrake on.
Yeah.
That's
impressive.
Yeah, pretty good start. Doing. Yeah. All right. Mercedes had a double DNF of most, basically. Hamilton had an engine failure. Still not sure entirely what happened there, but there was a large clunk and his engine stopped. So it doesn't sound good when you watch the video. But there was no smoke or anything. I don't think he blew a piston or anything, so it's possibly reparable. Not sure what happened. You got any insight on what that could have been, Ben?
Well, you know, I don't do a whole lot of work on hybrid turbo V6 engines. Maybe some kind of pumping system, maybe. Or maybe some kind of... Yeah, I don't know. Without any fire, that's... Much easier to diagnose when there's smoke and fire coming out of an engine, actually.
Yeah, generally a crack and some sort of oil leak.
Yeah, some kind of maybe pump failure or shaft failure or something like that.
Yeah. Maybe like, yeah, crankshaft, you know, drive shaft, that some failure like that. I wouldn't be drive shaft, it'd be crankshaft.
Those Formula One engineers are pretty good. They should be able to get them patched up A-okay.
Yeah, we'll see. Hopefully. Otherwise, some engine penalties may be coming his way.
Yeah.
All right, next up, Albon missed out on points this week after it was imperative that he scored points to confirm to the team that they made the right decision.
But he was at least close for some of it.
Yeah, he did finish 11th, right?
Yep. Yeah.
And then he was fighting for P10 for the second third of the race. And then kind of dropped back because they went really aggressive on tire strategy.
Yeah, and they just dropped off so fast.
Yep. So, all right. Next up, we got to talk about Sergio Perez.
Oh, no.
Yeah. This guy is a great driver.
He was not where he needed where Red Bull needed him to be in this race.
Exactly. Yeah. So he finished fifth, got some points, but he's in that car so that when Verstappen does not finish a race, he gets at the very least on a podium.
Yeah. And the point of giving him the fastest car in the grid is to make sure that even if he starts not at the front, he should have the ability to get to the front.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And he really stalled out once he passed Alonso. He just did not pull away at all. And so I don't know what the deal is. It's possible that Red Bull is not as far out in front as we initially thought this year. I think that with every race that's gone by, I think that more and more. Ferrari looks very fast this year.
They look way better this year. They look at more 2022 speed.
Yeah, and McLaren also is right on Ferrari's heels. So it's possible that Ferrari could challenge Red Bull this year for the championship, because the way it looks right now, it seems to me that both Ferraris have the pace to beat Perez. They probably, because I think Leclerc get second or third?
Second.
In Saudi Arabia. He must have gotten third. Yeah, because it was a Red Bull 1-2 for the first two races. So, but I don't think he was that far off Perez. And then Perez was nowhere in this race, and we had a Ferrari 1-2. I don't think I'm too far out of line saying that if Carlos Sainz was racing last week, that it would have at the very least been a Ferrari 3-4.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think this could be a little closer this year than it was last year.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I'm okay with that too. And looking at it, if Carlos Sainz scored, what would he need? Fourth place? If he finished fourth place in the last race, he would currently be leading the championship.
Yeah, as it stands, he's very close anyways.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And that was with a race down.
Yeah, with missing a race, which essentially is what Verstappen had this week, to be fair.
Mm-hmm.
He's only 11 points behind Verstappen in the championship. And so, I mean, he would be ahead of Leclerc almost assuredly, because Leclerc hasn't missed a race, and he's only 7 points ahead of Sainz.
Yeah.
I think everybody at Ferrari seems to think Leclerc is their golden boy. And for sure, in qualifying, I think Leclerc is overall faster. But over the last three seasons, it'd be hard to convince me that in the last two seasons, I'll say, Leclerc has been comprehensively better than Sainz.
Sainz has just been so consistently strong and improving, I feel like, even.
In the last three races that Ferrari have won have all been Sainz. Leclerc hasn't won a race since 2022.
Yeah, that's gotta hurt.
Yeah. So, it's kind of brutal, but that's where we
are. More Sainz to Red Bull fuel to the fire for me.
Yeah. All right. Sainz, speaking of which, had some weight reduction last week, taking his appendix out, and now
what's that gotta be, like a pound? Pound and a half?
I
don't know how big an appendix is.
I kind of doubt it's that much, but I mean, for sure, maybe teams that are painting their cars all black, or not painting their cars, I should say, to save weight, maybe just give your drivers appendectomies, and like that'll equal out.
Let's see.
The weight savings you missed.
Weight loss. Well, there's no numbers on how much weight you lose.
Okay. I kind of figured there wouldn't be. but anyway, it's not zero, that's for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on from that. Sauber's pit stops this week and every other week have been absolutely atrocious. It's like they've forgotten how to successfully take a wheel off and put a wheel back on without cross-threading one of the wheel nuts.
I felt so bad for Bottas. It's happened three times to him this season.
In three races. It's happened three times, and it's happened once to Joe. Like, they've in one race, they've screwed both of their drivers on pit stops.
Yeah, Bottas had he had two slow ones this race. One really bad one, one kind of bad one.
Yeah.
And then Joe had the same. Yeah, it's insane.
Yeah,
if it wasn't so sad, it would be kind of funny.
Yeah. Well, I think it's kind of funny.
It is kind of funny, yeah.
I'm but not a Sauber fan, sad. Though, so. Yeah, it is unfortunate for Sauber fans and in general. All right. Moving on to Fernando Alonso has earned a 20-second penalty, I think. A little bit harsh on him. 20-second penalty for his antics on the last lap defending from Russell. As we spoke about previously, George Russell has crashed out of the race on the last lap. And it was following... he was following Alonso. He was about a half a second back. Alonso then braked early for turn 6. And he was trying to get a good exit, so he was trying to take less speed into the corner. Russell was not expecting this, and so he closed up on Alonso way faster than he thought he would, and lost all of his downforce because of the dirty air, and ended up spinning out and hitting the wall, rolling onto the track, landing in the middle of the track on his side, and causing the final VSC, which, if it wasn't the last lap, I'm sure would have been a red flag.
Yeah, Australia might be a little gun-shy about red flags now.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, it was kind of a whole ordeal. I think 20 seconds was a little much.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Considering they gave Max Verstappen a 10-second penalty, if not even a 5-second penalty for... quote, brake checking Lewis Hamilton in Saudi Arabia in 2021.
Yeah.
Let's call that a similar issue, because as much as people hate Max, I refuse to believe that that was actually a brake check, even looking at the telemetry. Max was slowing down to let Lewis by, and then Lewis was not passing him, and so he kept slowing down, and Lewis was just staying directly behind him, and eventually it was too late. So I don't... that was a miscommunication, and I think this falls in that same category. So I think 20 seconds was way too much. I think at most it should have been 10 seconds.
I agree. And what surprised me is actually how mixed the discourse on this has been, from what I've seen on the internet.
How so?
It actually, there's more people than I thought that would be saying this was, you know, warranted, that it, you know, the purposeful brake check to mess with George Russell. I've actually seen a lot more opinions about that than I thought there would be.
Yeah. I definitely think the move was intentional. I don't think it was intentional it was not intended to make George Russell crash.
Yeah.
I think it was exactly what he said he was trying to do, which was he was trying to slow down early to get a good exit out of that corner. Maybe there was some gamesmanship in terms of he was trying to spook Russell a little bit and have
Fernando
him back
Alonso.
Off.
I'm sure there was.
Well, of course. So I'm thinking maybe he was trying to spook George a little bit and maybe get him to back off, but I don't think he was trying to cause George to have a rollover crash into the wall.
Yeah, no. And I mean, at least in Oregon, the law on the roads is the person who runs into the back of you has the responsibility to not run into the back of you.
Yeah, exactly. So I think maybe a penalty was deserved. Definitely don't do that in the future.
Not 20 seconds.
But 20 seconds is wild. Where did that... Do we have the final
that put him
time?
Down to 8th.
We do have this final race time. Alonso, with the 20-second penalty, was bumped from 6th to 8th. And that promotes Yuki Tsunoda to 7th. So the impact of this is now RB is ahead of Haas in the championship.
Incredible.
Yep.
It's the butterfly effect in timelines. There's a timeline where that penalty didn't happen and Haas is in front of RB.
Yep. Pretty wild stuff here. So I think, did Alonso do something a little bit naughty? Yes. Did it deserve a penalty? Maybe. Did it deserve a 20-second penalty? Absolutely not. So that's where I stand on that. I think we're on similar pages, Ben.
I agree, yeah.
But speaking of all of that, let's move into our meme break.
Speaking of pages, look at these pages of memes.
All right, do you want to go first, Ben, or should I?
Yeah, well, first, I have a statistic.
Oh, boy.
In all three races that Carlos Sainz has won, George Russell has not finished them.
This is true, and also...
And especially the last two. In the last two races Carlos Sainz has won, Singapore and Australia, George Russell has had a race-ending crash on the final lap of the race.
Yep. And
the monkey's paw right there, folks.
Yeah, for sure. It's a little spooky. I think Lando Norris has come in third in all three races as well. Or no, he came second in Singapore. Never mind.
Yeah. Close, though. He's on the podium. We'll call it.
Lando podium. We'll call that. Verstappen had an off day all three times.
Yeah. If I had a nickel for every single time.
Well, granted, for Sainz to win, Verstappen would have to have an off day, so that's kind of a prerequisite. But
yeah.
But still.
Maybe that won't be the case this year at some point. Who knows?
Maybe. All right.
All right.
Ben, do you have your meme pulled up?
I do.
Amazing.
Oh, it's so small. There we go. So here we have the classic Hot Ones meme, the, hey, look at us, who would have thought? Except it's Hamilton and Verstappen both out less than halfway through the race, which I thought was hilarious. It translates better in photo, but it is still pretty funny when you think about it.
It is very funny, yes. All right, next up, we'll go with my meme. If you want to go back to your headshot, Ben.
Already done.
Beautiful. All right. Here it's very simple. We've got the onboard from George Russell following Fernando Alonso. And the caption is, the image Mercedes sent to the stewards. And it's just Alonso's car with a banana behind it, like in Mario Kart.
That's a screenshot from the Switch 2 Mario Kart leak.
Yes.
It's getting so realistic now.
Yeah, the graphics are so good now. Yeah, I found this comical when I saw it.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are our memes. Ben's, I think, is a little better than mine this week, but it's okay.
I had to look a lot harder for it. I spent a long time.
Yeah. Alrighty. Let's move on to the championship standings in Formula One. Max Verstappen is still in first place at 51 points. Charles Leclerc is hot on his tail now with 47 points. Sergio Perez is no longer in second place in the championship. Ouch. With 46 points. And then fourth place is Carlos Sainz with 40 points. Right in the mix even after missing a race. If he finishes the championship within, I'll say, 10 points of anybody else, I will feel so bad for him.
Yeah, because there's the race right there.
Yeah. All right. Oscar Piastri is actually ahead of Lando Norris in fifth place. Is that right? That doesn't seem right, but it probably is. And then sixth place is Lando Norris with 27 points. George Russell's in seventh with 18. Then we have Alonso and Stroll in eighth and ninth. Tenth is Hamilton. 11 through 15 are Tsunoda, Oliver Bearman, Hulkenberg, Magnussen, and Albon. Albon is the first driver with 0 points. And then we have 16 through 20 are Zhou, Ricciardo, Ocon, Gasly, and Bottas. And then rounding everybody off in 21st place is Logan Sargeant. No longer
Pierre Gasly. 0 points.
Yeah. So that is where we are at right now.
The fact that Hamilton has almost been pushed out of the top 10 by Lance Stroll.
Yeah. Brutal. He was actually relegated by Lance Stroll in qualifying this week. He got knocked out in Q2.
Lance Stroll to Mercedes confirmed.
Yeah, unlikely, but it's possible. I don't think it's possible, but I could be wrong. I hope I'm wrong. That would be wild.
That would be so entertaining.
Yeah. This is what happens when you simulate 10 seasons in F1 24. of the My Race or whatever.
When you let an AI play 2024.
Yeah. There's some pretty crazy stuff that happens in that one. all right. Then championship standings for the teams. We've got Red Bull out in front at 97 points. Ferrari right on their tail at 93 points. Then McLaren at 55. Mercedes at 26. Aston Martin in fifth at 25. Mercedes and Aston are very close to each other, but I guess the Mercedes DNF will do that.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have RB at 6 points and Haas at 4 points. And then Williams, Alpine, and Sauber are yet to score. And I think we have a new worst car, not only because they're in 10th place, but they are just so slow. I think Sauber is officially worse than Alpine.
It's every aspect. It's the car.
It's the team in general.
It's the team, the pit stop team. There is no aspect of that team that is faster than any other team.
Yeah.
It's insane to me that you can be like that systematically slow throughout an entire team.
Yeah, well, I think I'm going to say that the cars, in terms of pure performance, I'll take my statement back. I think they're similar. I think they're very close to each other. I think Alpine has a better operation overall in terms of their team.
Yeah.
And I think the caliber of driver that Alpine has is better overall as well.
I would also agree, yeah.
I have no doubt in my mind that Ocon Gasly is a way better pairing than Bottas Zhou.
Yeah.
So I think that contributes a lot to it. Alpine, they've been getting into the top 15-ish sometimes so far this year. So I don't know. I think it's a case of two very solid drivers taking a very bad car to places that it shouldn't be.
I agree wholeheartedly.
Yeah. I remember a couple years ago when people were touting Pierre Gasly as like a top five driver
because
he was, well, consistently finishing top five in an AlphaTauri, which was unheard of.
Yeah, especially after that Monza race that he had when he got dropped from Red Bull down to AlphaTauri.
Yeah.
People and then, were like, yep, this is it. This is the guy.
Yeah.
He is him.
He is him. All right. That runs off the championship standings. Let's move on to the pit stop championship. In first place this week, we have Sergio Perez at 2.1 seconds flat, followed by Leclerc at 2.18, and Alcon at 2.43. Quite a big gap there. And then 4th and 5th are Hamilton, Tsunoda, and then 6th through 10 running off the points finishers are Piastri, Russell, Albon, Gasly, and Sainz. And then the two slowest pit stops, notably, are both Sauber drivers at Zhou and Bottas. And that only counts their best pit stop time, too.
Ouch. The best pit stop time of a 3.4.
Yeah, kind of not great. Bottas' best pit stop today was 3.6, or not today, but this week. 3.63 seconds. All right. standings for the Pit Stop Championship. Perez has taken the lead of the championship, and he's followed by Leclerc and Verstappen. Hamilton in fourth, Sainz in fifth, and then we have the next five are Tsunoda, Russell, Ocon, Piastri, and Alonso, and then 11 through 15 are Norris, Magnussen, Hülkenberg, Albon, and Stroll. And then 16 through 21 are Behrman, Gasly, Ricciardo, Sargeant, Zhou, and Bottas. Sauber yet to score points.
Classic. I suspect it'll be like that for a while.
Yeah, probably. Team championship, Red Bull is in front by a mile, followed by Ferrari and Mercedes, then McLaren and RB. And then the last five are Alpine, Haas, Aston Martin, and Williams, and Sauber. Okay, overtake of the week. I gave this one to Colton Herta on Linus Lundqvist on lap 12 of the Million Dollar Challenge. I was surprised that there was an overtake that got this from that race, yeah. But it did. There weren't actually that many great overtakes in Formula 1, Formula 2, Formula 3 this week. Most of them were pretty much the same. The overtake around the outside into turn 10, which we've seen a million and a half times.
Yeah.
So I give this one to a absolute dive bomb, lick the stamp and send it that Colton Herta did on Lundqvist.
I was so impressed that he kept it on the track and didn't wash wide.
Yeah.
Well, didn't wash wide off the track. He still washed wide, but yeah, that was an impressive lunge.
For sure.
That's like the video game Gran Turismo. How hard can I lock up the brakes and not have to deal with damage on?
Yeah.
I thought I had more to say, but I just cut it off there. I short-circuited.
I was like, I think he's still... I thought you might have cut out more technical difficulties.
Processing, and I was like, no, actually, I think I was done.
Okay. All right. Next up, we got weekly predictions for last week in the Thermal Club.
Predictions is generous for this week.
Yeah. So, pole position. What'd you say, Ben?
I had McLaughlin.
I had O'Ward, and it went to Polo. O'Ward did not have a good week.
No, he did not.
Podium. What do you got, Ben?
I had Dixon, Power, and VK. And first of all, Dixon managed to ruin that, any chance of that, earlier before we even got to the race. But I would like to say that my podium three were all taken out in the same move.
This is true. I love that Roman Grosjean is the reason that all three of them were not on the podium.
Yeah.
And yet it wasn't Grosjean's fault.
it was awesome.
That is pretty funny. All right. And then I had O'Ward, Newgarden, and Herta.
A really strong podium that you would have thought would have had some traction.
Yeah. I love how we had what we thought were the ideal top six people, mm-hmm. and none of them hit. So a podium was actually Alex Palou, Scott McLaughlin, and Felix Rosenqvist. Rosenqvist is having a fantastic start to the season.
So weird.
Yeah, he gets dropped from McLaren and then goes to Meyer-Shank and is absolutely tearing it up. Good stuff from him. And then winning pit stops, we made predictions, but they were irrelevant because bad format.
This weekend of IndyCar is irrelevant.
Yes, that is a good way. Yeah, I agree. All right, Australian Grand Prix. Let's go through the top five to remind everybody. It was Carlos Sainz in first, Leclerc in second, Lando Norris in third, Piastri in fourth, and Perez in fifth. What was your top five, Ben?
I had Verstappen, Perez, Sainz, Leclerc, and Alonso with Hülkenberg as my dark horse. I would like to say Hülkenberg did get points, so I think that counts for a little bit of something, but not enough.
This is true. All right, I had Verstappen winning, and then Leclerc and Norris next, so I got those two correct in second and third. And then I had Perez fourth and Sainz fifth, with Alonso as my dark horse. So I got at least a couple right. I was not expecting Sainz to win the race. Nor was anybody.
some tifosi will say they were.
Yes, I guess. All right. Fastest lap. What did you say, Ben?
I had Verstappen for this.
And I had Lando Norris, and it went to Charles Leclerc. But to be fair, Lando Norris did have the fastest lap for a solid 10 laps.
So close.
Then Leclerc took it at the end, like 2 laps left. I was upset. All right. Driver of the day. What did you say, Ben?
It was Sainz. I voted for myself. I voted Piastri. Because I thought, you know, Australia, and clearly Danny Ricciardo wasn't going to get it. And to be fair, he was in the top three. I think he and Lando both had like 10 or 11% of the vote. But yeah, even I voted for Sainz.
Yeah, so you said Piastri and then voted for Sainz. I actually said Sainz, and I got that correct. I did not vote for Sainz because by the time I saw the graphic, I didn't need to. he won by a large margin.
He had like 38%.
Something crazy like that. And then the other McLaren, the two McLarens were down, like tied at 11% or something like that. Which I think Lando had a better race than Oscar, but at the same time, they did swap the cars. So it's, you could go either way. But
Oscar Strayan, mate.
This is probably the reason why he was higher up.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Now we have our predictions for the Japanese Grand Prix next week. Give me your top five, Ben.
We're back to our regularly scheduled Verstappen posting in first. After that, we have Sainz, who's on a roll, Leclerc, Perez, and Alonso in fifth. And I have Tsunoda as my dark horse because that boy has absolutely been tearing it up. Unless he isn't, in which case he is not. But sometimes he is.
Great stuff, Ben. All right. I've got Verstappen in first. I think he will return with a vengeance. And then Sainz second, Norris third, Leclerc fourth, and Piastri fifth. And then I have George Russell as my dark horse. Oh, how the mighty have fallen.
Where's Perez, Nathan?
Perez, if you remember what happened in Japan last year, is currently playing bumper cars with Bottas in the back.
if he's that far back this year. Bottas was in the back last year, but if he's as far back as Bottas is this year, that's a problem.
Yeah, I intentionally left Perez off the list because, I don't know, I doubt he'll finish below fifth, but he has proven multiple times that Japan does not suit him very well.
Yeah. So, also, just for reference, if anybody thinks that I dislike Perez, just remember that. I think Nathan actually dislikes him more, so just remember that.
Okay, let's not do that, because that's not true. I also love Perez.
We as both a guy. Love Perez.
We both really like Perez as a guy. He's the closest thing we have to a home driver. Super nice guy. Has a family. Loves tequila. I think he has his own tequila brand. But boy, he's not, let's not go into this, Ben.
We've gotten into this enough.
People who watch the podcast know, where we stand on Perez. We don't hate him. Yeah. Really like the guy. He's not what Red Bull needs right now.
Just needs to be a little faster.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens in Japan. This is no slander towards him. This is my prediction. all right, fastest lap. What do you got, Ben?
I've got Leclerc for this.
And I have Sainz, driver of the day. Yeah, two Ferraris. I think that's probably because Verstappen will be so far out in front, he won't need to put in fastest laps.
He won't even care.
Yeah. All right. Driver of the day, what do you got?
I have Alonso.
And I have Albon. I think he'll score points here, but I could be wrong.
And I have Alonso just because he's been to the track a whole bunch, you know, he knows it well. And if he does okay, if he gets above fifth with some heroics, I think that might be enough. We'll see.
We will see. All right, now let's move on to everybody's favorite segment, Ben's words of wisdom. What do you have for us this week, Ben? Reading it, I am already excited.
Yeah. So it sounds like a super complex thing, but I think learning to solder is one of the most basic, yet one of the most useful skills you can learn in the modern era. I'm not talking like learning how to repair PCBs and create your own Game Boy cartridges or anything like that. I'm just talking like you need to get two wires together, or you need to connect a wire to a board. Soldering is so fast, so easy. Anyone can learn it. I have, I'm not getting paid by them, but it'd be really cool if I did. The, what's it called? It's the Pine Sill. It's the, let me look up the brand so you guys can, the Pine 64 Pine Sill is what it's called. It's the V2. It is $25. It runs off of either USB-C, a DC laptop barrel jack, or you can just hook it up to a hot wire and a ground wire, essentially. And it runs on a 32-bit system. Like, for $25, it's a soldering pen that runs off of a USB-C power bank. And you can learn how to weld. Soldering in flux is super cheap. You can fix so many things that you don't have to call somebody else to fix. Small things, big things. You can solder pipes. You can solder, you know, small electronics. It's, yeah. It's super useful, and it doesn't even have to be metal. You can solder pieces of plastic together if you really need.
Yes, I agree wholeheartedly, Ben.
It'll take you 15 minutes to learn.
It's really easy. I've done it, and I can say that not having a soldering iron, I can count on multiple hands how many times I wish I did have a soldering iron.
It's so useful.
So, I concur, Ben. It's been a while since I've soldered, but when I was briefly an electrical engineering major, I did learn that skill, and it is very useful.
Yeah, and it's literally, guys, it's the soldering pen that I have that runs off USB-C is not far off the size of this permanent marker. I mean, it's super compact. You just, everything uses USB-C anyways. So just, yeah, learn how to solder. Super useful. You won't regret it.
Good stuff from our resident engineer. I appreciate it, Ben. And thank you, the listener and watcher, for watching and listening to this episode of Rev Hang. If you enjoyed it, leave a like or rating on the platform you listened on. It really helps us out. Subscribe or follow if you'd like to see more on YouTube and Rumble. If you want to see updated standings for IndyCar and Formula One or a calendar of upcoming racing from those series, check out our website, revhang.com. If you have any questions about racing or about us, hit us up on any socials in comments or DMs, and we may feature your question on the next show. You can follow Ben on Instagram at BenjiMeetsWorld and myself at 2N_squared. You can follow the RevHang page on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and even TikTok for now at RevHang Media. We'll be back in 2 weeks to talk about the Formula One Japanese Grand Prix, but until then, I've been Nathan.
And I'm Ben.
Thanks for hanging out.
See you later.